today's November 15th, we're taping Machalos Asuros, and we are just reviewing, we're going through the chapters in Yerodeya, starting with Siman Pei Zayin, page 7. And when the Torah says, Lo Shvashel Kedi Bachalei Yimo, do not cook a kid, a small goat, in its mother's milk. So the Gemara in Mesechta Chulin darshans and explains how we go from a kid to all meat, how we go from its mother's milk to all kinds of milk, right? Yummy? Right? So in other words, it's also prohibited to cook chicken, to cook beef in goat milk. It's prohibited to cook goat meat in cow milk. Got me? So the three meats that this refers to are goats, sheep, and cow, and cows that give milk, and the milk of these three. Got it? But if you were to cook the meat of a deer with the milk of a cow, you would be violating the Rabban. Cooking it is actually permitted, right? Not only cooking it, but deriving benefit from it is permitted.
For what, a goat and a cow?
You have to sell it, I don't know, if you're cooking in a French restaurant, and they're serving deer venison, and they want you to cook it with cheese, right? But if you're working in a French restaurant, and they want you to cook cheese on top of beef, right? It may be a problem there. Okay? Right? So, simple enough. You all know the definition of meat for this halacha, and you all know the definition of milk for this halacha. You may just want to know, if this is the case, why did the Torah limit it to the goat, and why did it limit it to its mother's milk? Which implies that the only meat to which this applies, simply from the pshat of the Torah, is from a goat, and the only milk is its own mother. You might be able to cook the meat of a goat in the milk of a goat that's not its mother. Why is the Torah so limited in terms of this, how it represents this mitzvah? Why not say it the way the halacha interprets it? Yes?
I would say that's the reason why they use that as an example. And it is that most things in the Torah are examples because they can't go through every single contingency of every single law in the Torah.
For that we have oral law, Torah Shabbat.
And I think the reason why it was a goat as opposed to a cow was that a goat's a much smaller animal, and if you're going to be using, you're likely to keep the cow and keep milking it, as opposed to the goat, which is a smaller animal and something that's more likely to be killed and eaten.
You're doing what the good before should try to do with this. Shmuel Dabin, mostly on the program, ask this. The Shem just took it for granted. This is what Torah Shabbat tells us what it is. And don't ask any other questions. But it's still a worthwhile endeavor. If this is what the Torah meant, if Torah Shabbat tells us that this is what the Torah meant, why not say it more clearly?
Okay. There's only so much room to go around.
Okay, good. All right. Torah, we're certainly in Yeshiva University, we understand that the Torah without Torah Shabbat Peh is almost a closed book. Would we know what Tok Tafos Peh and Echem are? Would we know how to have Inu Yom Kippur? Are these all just by your own discretion and your own subjectivity? Right? That's what Kara would say, actually. Right? Karas observe that they're very serious about the observance of Torah, right? But they have vastly different approaches to things because without the Torah Shabbat Peh, the Gemara in Erevin Daf Nun Dalid has quite a bit of a discussion on this. And so, I would use the Din of Bas B'Cholov as an absolute proof of Torah Shabbat Peh. Right? This is incomprehensible without Torah Shabbat Peh. Right? There are clearly other examples. Now, this is the sort of thing you could just tell you, put on tuta folks, painting that, without explaining further what that is. Shechita itself, we discussed. The Torah says, shech the animal like I showed you. Right? What does it say in the Torah? What does God show us that it was shechita? Right? Like I told you, kasher tzivisicha. Where is that? Show me where that is, that I should know how to do shechita. Answer is, Hashem told Moshe a lot of things, Baal Peh. It's called Torah Baal Peh. Right? And that there's an oral tradition that comes to define what Lo Tavash Shel B'Nivu Chalevimo, and that manifests itself in this chapter called Kol HaBosar and Maseches Chulin, the Mishnayos and the Gemaras, and we interpret it, and it's codified here in this halacha. Okay, got it? The next question is, what is Bishul? Okay. So, Bishul does not necessarily mean to cook, it's not uses bishul to prepare with fire. Bishul in a liquid is usually used to describe a process of preparation for food with that terminology. However, it doesn't suffice for the fact that the Torah tells us in Sefer Devarim that we should beis shem lamed the korban pesach. Got it? The Torah says, Beis Shin Lamed, the covered head, Bashel, will be Shalto Bechav. So there are different interpretations of why the Torah will tell us in Devarim to Mevashel the covered Pesach, when it warns us very much in Sefer Shmos, yeah, that the covered Pesach must be roasted. Al Bechav na Uvashel Bechushal Bamayim. But now, I'm going to parsha your head right now. Why does the Torah have to tell us in Shmos, don't eat the Korban Pesach, boshel mevushol b'mayim? Doesn't the word boshel mevushol itself tell us that?
This specifies boiling.
When you put a fire on your pot with water on it, what else is going to happen to you when you win? Kamash Malan, that there are some times where you can mivashel something without water, such as
frying.
No, there are other things you could do, maybe oil or something. But alright, sometimes without even a liquid. Maybe there's enough liquid in the food itself. Following?
Yeah.
Baking, broiling, roasting. So what do you think? Just by simple parsha note. Does lo sevashel b'di b'chalei b'mo include, listen carefully, lo titzaleh b'di b'chalei b'mo, lo to'ofet b'di b'chalei b'mo, right, you can't say, don't roast milk and meat, don't bake milk and meat, don't broil milk and meat, don't fry milk and meat, what do you think? Do you write some or not?
To include everything.
Of course.
It's in both.
It includes everything. Alright? And it's, alright? So, any way of heating up milk and meat together, right, would be in violation of this. Now, it's all, but it's derech bishul osra Torah. It's derech bishul osra Torah. The prohibition has to be with the derech of cooking, which is a liquid, not with water, but a liquid with a solid, and you put fire underneath. Okay? You can cook with tomato sauce too. Right? Okay? So what I'm trying to say is that if you would take a piece of bologna and a piece of cheese, bologna from ostensibly from a cow, and a piece of cheese, put it together in a sandwich and eat them together at the same time,
it'd be a
derbama. Because it wasn't cooked together. They're bishul asratori, got it? So all the kashas we ask about tarubas or mixing, putting soup in a milchic bowl, or putting a steak on top of a milchic soup in a milchic bowl, or putting steak on a milchic plate, the first question that you always have to ask is, was it hot? Was the thing very hot? Derech bishul means it has to be heated up to a certain temperature in order to consider it passing one time one to the other. Okay, clear? What other halachos care about the laws of cooking? What other halachos?
On Shabbos.
On Shabbos. Is this considered cooking on Shabbos or not? The threshold for what's considered cooking in one is usually accepted in the other. Might be some exceptions. Of course, in the Sefer Pesachim also was interested in what's considered cooking. Get this? The Korban Pesach has to be prepared on a spit. Right? You got it? It has to be prepared on a spit. But it can't be prepared on a metal spit, because the Gemara knew that metal is a very, very good conductor of electricity and heat. Therefore, if the animal is being roasted on a metal spit, some of the metal may be what's preparing it rather than a fire. Sliation means it has to be prepared in fire. So what kind of spit can you use?
Wood.
It says to use wood. But a particular kind of wood, says the Gemara. Wood, get this, listen carefully to this. Wood that is from a pomegranate tree. The Gemara made evidently some inquiries in this. And the Gemara determined that other types of wood have so much xylem phloem inside the wood that you know what's going to happen if you use that kind of wood as a spit? The fire will burn the xylem phloem inside the spit, and it may be, some of the Korban Pesach may be warmed up by that heated water and violate the Torah about not having it. Okay. Alright, but when it comes to Hilchos Pasuk Cholov, it doesn't really matter how this thing is getting warmed up together. It could be, of course, milk is in a liquid state. Right? But let's ask this question. A hard piece of cheese, got it? A hard piece of cheese that's put on top of a piece of steak, both from a kosher animal, think of a goat, sheep, or cattle, and you put it in your oven. You get why I'm asking this question. You see it? There's no liquid here. And you put up the heat, and the cheese starts to melt all over the steak.
Right? Is that like being considered like a liquid?
I might not call this cooking, but it's still absolutely utter. In other words, when the Torah says "Los v'ashel diba chalevimo," the halacha allows for all kinds of preparation. You know why? Because the shorish. Now I'm telling you a simple pshat. Right? The shorish bet shin lamed is not limited to warming up a food with liquid. Hence, the Torah can refer to preparing the Korban Pesach as bet shin lamed. It just don't besh in line the Korban Pesach with what? That's why the Torah has to say in Parshas Bo, you with me? That when the Torah says, Lo tochal imen no uvoshel medushal, that should have been enough. Right? Instead, what does the Torah say? Uvoshel medushal b'mayim. Don't be shell the Korban Pesach with water. Okay, got it? So the Gemara could have given a pshat answer to what could be shot of the halachah. Okay, got it? Gemara's answer is that when the Torah says we shot the halachah, it refers to something called chagiga sitau, or chagiga that you prepare to eat as dinner if you're a large group. Okay. All right. So, hey Zion, we have our definition, yes, of meat, of milk, and of vision. Okay? Got it? What do you think of this? If you ate pig meat with milk,
it's not kosher.
Of course, it's not kosher. You get malchus for eating pig meat.
That's like something you wouldn't normally eat.
Do you get malchus for eating
Probably not.
No, it has to be from a kosher. Now, you started to give us some svaras of why the Torah says a goat, right?
So you listen to the svara Shadal gives. Shadal says that if you take the weight of a goat and give the amount of milk it gives each day, right? The goat weighs 100 pounds, it gives 4 pounds of milk every day. Got it? The ratio of milk of a goat to its weight is higher than that of a cow. Cow gives a lot more milk, but it also weighs a whole lot more. Right? It weighs 1,200 pounds, but it doesn't give you 12 times the amount that the goat gives. You got it? I've just made up those numbers. Okay, you with me? So the Torah uses the goat because if you were going to cook an animal and its mother, with its mother, then the goat is the one you want to do it. Now, this gives its added strength when you consider that there have been some studies. I'm not sure if we discussed this in this class, but listen carefully. There have been some studies going back as far back as 1928 in some archaeological digs. The first one was at a place called Ras Shamra in the north of Israel. In 1985, there was a study out of Harvard on this topic. And I remember when it came out. And in the Rambam, in the Morning Bukhan, the Rambam writes that he is aware of an ancient practice of cooking milk in its meat in its mother's milk to show that we can dominate and bend the forces of life and death. Life is indicated by milk. Milk turns it. Most of the extra comes from blood, from the vena cava, right? It goes right to the others. Okay. The same is true with humans, right? So the milk is the lifeblood of the animal. It's only given when the animal is alive. Meat is taken from the animal when it's dead. So ancient man thought to control the forces governing life and death by cooking milk and meat together. This was their star. Okay? Alright? So the Torah wants Torah forbids this. And it doesn't only forbid the cooking of this thing, it forbids eating it afterwards, and it forbids the benefit from this thing. Okay? It's also asur b'hana. Okay? Okay? So if I ask you the question, why do we treat basar b'chalav with such restriction? Nice. Why do we treat basar b'chalav with such much greater restriction than all other kashrus? First of all, it's asur b'hana. Right? So if you have pork somehow, or you're trapped, caught unkosher fish or an unkosher animal, you're allowed to sell that thing. You shouldn't be seers do business in things that are usher. But b'derech hakrai, if you have something that's unkosher, you're allowed to sell it. But not basar b'chalav. Basar b'chalav is usher b'hana, you can't derive any benefit from it. Why are we treating it so harshly? Because in light of what I just told you the last 5 minutes, basar b'chalav has a bodhisattva undertones to it. Right? Ancient men thought that they could sway their gods that they worshipped with their incantations and their magical performances. Right? Okay? The ancients felt that their gods that they worshipped were also to be swayed and bent by their magic. Okay? They have stories to that effect. What we do, how far are we? What do we believe we can sway God with?
What do you mean sway God?
We sway God with our prayer, with our answers, with our morality, with our inner.
Yeah, my prayer. Let's
try to. You know someone who's suffering from cancer, so I'm going to give tzedakah. I'm going to say shabarach. I'm going to become better. You should concentrate on a cure and medicine. How is that going to work? Because I feel that God has the power to change this, right? It's complicated how that works with a petitionary prayer. actually has a like make a practical nachkamina. If God wants this person to be sick and die, who am I to change God's plan? This is very much debated amongst the philosophers exactly how this works, but this is in a nutshell why we're treating Osav HaKolov so much more harshly than other cases of Yisurim. Short answer is other cases of Yisurim, not Yisurim. Short answer is that Osav HaKolov has undertones of Avodah Zarah. Okay, this is why we're so harsh. Let's look at the next halacha. So because of these undertones, we take a lot of concern of our chakos with basar chalav. Two people should not be eating cheese or milchiks and fleishiks at the same table. A caveat. Let's say you're eating in the park on a table, and the guy sitting next to you is eating meat. And can you eat your cheese sandwich right next to him? The answer the Gemara there says, and Halacha says, you are allowed to. So what is this Halacha saying? Don't eat milk and meat at the same table? The answer is, two people who know each other shouldn't eat milk and meat at the same table. But if you are eating, I mean, according to this, you should never be able to eat next to a Gentile, because you may come to eat some of his food. What are we talking about here? We're talking about men who know each other.
Would it be possible that's referring to you can't serve them together? It's like you can't put them down on the same table?
Well, the same waiter certainly shouldn't. I'm talking about your brother is eating a cheese sandwich on a table. Usually today we have tablecloths and milkshakes, tablecloths and plates. Alright, but let's say you're eating in a park. Alright? You're on a picnic or something. I don't know. Do they tell you in advance only bring milk lunches? People bring their own lunches. Sometimes they bring plastic lunches, right? So this halacha says don't eat plastic next to someone else who's eating milk. Why? Because, I don't know, do you do this? Do you eat sit next to someone else? Oh, what do you got there? Did you just stop taking some?
I've sat down with people who are eating milk while I was eating plastic.
Right, so the assumption is that if you're allowed to do that because you are in a situation where you don't just reach over and say, well, let me have some of that.
Yeah.
Right? Okay? But if you do eat in such a situation, which is maybe with your brother at the table, right? So your brother is eating chicken wings, right? And you're having a cheese sandwich.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Okay, you got it?
I think those are some wings right now.
You go to Buffalo, nice buffalo wings, and you got the curly fries, right? And you got the onion rings, and you got the incredible onion, you know that one at Duggies. I'm not talking about that big onion that comes in like layers. Breaded onion is amazing. It takes you about an hour to eat the whole thing. So if you may just stick your fork in there and take some of the fleshy stuff while you have a cheese in your mouth. Now, this sounds like a gzera. Explain. It sounds like a gzera. And the Gemara allows it. Gemara says that sometimes we make gzera for drabanans. Usually gzera should only be for d'oraisas. Protect d'oraisas. We need to protect drabanans. Because even if I do push my fork into his plate and take one of his buffalo wings while I have cheese in my mouth, finish my sentence, you still wouldn't
be violating
the Torah, because they have to be cooked together. So Kamash Lulam, this is what I started to say, is that we treat basar chalav with so much more restrictions than other averos because it has avodah zarah overtones to it. Okay? Get clear with that, right? And most people, when they talk about how you keep a kosher home, you know, big deal, the ingredients, I know what to stay away from. I know what meat to stay away from, and I know what makes a kosher fish, and I know what makes a kosher fowl. The real challenge of keeping a kosher home is separating milchiks and fleishiks. Right? What happens if you move into an apartment where there's only one sink? Right? You should try to get an apartment with two sinks for this very reason. Right? Got it? Most apartments actually do come with two sinks, it's just that they're one right next to the other. Pei test din shelo lechol gvina achar basa. Okay, here is the big thing. That you shouldn't even eat, not only should you not eat them together, which would only violate the Rabbanon, because they're not cooked. Yeah? You shouldn't even eat one after the other. Now, it doesn't say how long to wait here. Right? I'm going to put this in the background, because this is what I want to do inside with you. All right? How long do you wait, guys, here in the class? How long do you wait? You wait 5?
3. 3? Yeah.
Exactly 5 hours, you say?
I said 3.
I know.
I said 5.
Oh, you said 5? Okay. How many, do you have a minute?
Mm-hmm. 3.
Also 3. Okay. We will trace the various minhagim. There are about 6 or 7 well-defined, clearly defined minhagim and where they stem, whether from the Gemara, the Rambam, or later. Right? We'll check into that. Rabbi Tam has an interesting minhag also. This is what we're going to do next class. So bring in, guys, bring in a Yoredei Achelek Aleph, Simen Pei Tes. Right? Get your hands on Yoredei Achelek Aleph, Simen Pei Tes. We'll be doing this inside. Okay? We're going to be tracing, this will be an interesting, that might be a good paper actually, but you already have your topics, right?
Yeah.
All of it? Alright. The next thing, Sadi, is Dine Chal. Chal is an other. Why should there be a special section of the Shulchan Aruch on the laws of eating udders? U-D-D-E-R. Because there's milk in it. You shech the cow, and then you slice off the udder. There's milk, there's going to be milk in there. So what do you think?
Probably not.
Yeah, I don't think you're
allowed to
eat the udder.
The answer is absolutely. Yes, you can. Not only are you allowed to eat the udder, you're allowed to cook the udder.
That sounds like something you were saying before about the life and death part, but it's still part of the dead and the meat.
Once you check the animal, that's not milk anymore. Milk only comes from a living animal. Now, because of Marasani, what do we do? What does Halacha say to do? Smack the udder against something for a couple of times and let the milk drip out. Mm-hmm. What other body organ of a cow, not a chicken though, that you have to like smack it a little bit?
Liver.
What?
The liver.
Even better than the liver? But you're on the right track. Absolutely on the right track. No.
Brain?
No. The heart. No. Same reason that you would say about the liver. Okay? The liver, what you have to do is actually slice it open and let it drain. Right? So the heart will have to smack it and slice it in different directions. Because otherwise, if you just cook it the way it is, a cow heart is a pretty big thing, right? It has to pump a lot of blood. A cow heart is absolutely mutter b'achila. Right? Chicken heart is small. You can eat with the chickens. You can eat the chicken heart, there's nothing wrong with it. And you can eat the cow heart too. You have to smack it around and let the blood spill out and then roast it. Okay. It's usually not sold. Those things are called humbles. Right? Humbles are usually not eaten. If you ever eat humble pie, it's nothing to do with humility. People mistake what humble pie is. The humbles are the parts of the cow that people used to give to the poor people. When the Puritans came and they had these special Sunday parties, so the people that were working for them had to eat kidneys and liver and pancreas. They had to eat parts of the animal that was the spleen, the things like that were. But parts of the animal that no one wanted to eat, like the meat parts, right? So they used to make pie out of those humbles, right? So eating humble pie used to be something that a poor person would
do. Thing.
Yeah, so look it up online, see the origin of the term humble pie. It has nothing to do with the word humble meaning humility. It has to do with being poor and eating the humbles. Yeah. It's a terminology that it was a different word for it, but it's a different type of pie. Okay. You got something there? No. Coming up? Okay. So, that is the laws of eating the udder, U-D-D-E-R. Right? Tzadik Aleph is what happens if Bas B'Cholav actually touches. So, you have to scrape off some of it. It's simple. right? Tzadik Beis is one of the most common laws that questions that the rabbi can get, is that you mixed up the fleshy spoon with the milk. The first question you want to ask is, was the food boiling hot, or did it have qualities of bishul when it went in? And two, another question that's very commonly asked is, when was the last time this thing was used with boiling hot? If it's more than 24 hours, and here's the terminology you have to get to know, it's called nosan tamir gum, and this thing does not impart taste, it imparts negative taste. And that is usually used not to work on the pot. The pot probably might have to get captured anyway. It's used for the food, right? You really have to work hard at chafing up food. You got it?
Yeah.
Chafing up the food, you really have to do something really awful. Okay? So you could trade up the utensil, that can happen. And then you have to see if the utensil should be kosher. Like I said earlier when we talked about the carbon pesach, metal is a very good conductor of heat. So metal absorbs and spits out, and it exudes. But other items like earthenware and the like, yeah, things like that are much more difficult to exude. They absorb. They don't emit. So it's only human kasha and things like that. It's enormous. Okay. All right. This is why we need separate pots. Okay. Now, in addition to this, two additional levels important to know, but that will be when you do your pages with the sayings, is dabar charif. If the thing is very sharp, like an onion, or it's a sharp, it's as if low sharpness is like cooking. Okay, you get it? Something sharp, even if it's cold, is like cooking. Finally, bread must be parv in order to be kosher. Explain why.
I forget.
It's milk and bread. You might have bologna sandwiches. Fleshy bread is really unusual, but there are some. This is why we consider them not to be good hashkachos. You can find bread with hashkachos. Try and pay with you. Milk and bread hashkachos. That's why we don't love trying and pay. Right? What's their excuse? They know the Gemara, they know this halacha. It's a whole sin in the Shulchan Aruch. It's the last sin in your day. Right? So he's going to say, well, this bread is different enough. These people are not going to make a mistake. An English muffin, maybe you can have a milk sandwich. Because an English muffin looks different enough. Right? Gemara says if you make a big loaf of bread with a big, and you spell in the word halacha on the bread, then you can make milk. It's solid, right? But otherwise, if you don't have such a demarcation, milchik or fleshik bread is considered unkosher. Right? One last point is, remember, the term basar v'cholav is not basar v'cholav v'vav. It's not milk and meat. Milk and meat does not violate the Torah. It's basar v'cholav, the bet, milk mixed into meat through a cooking process. That's what's also by the Torah. But again, I said it, because milk and meat has a bizarre undertones to it, right? Therefore, we apply all kinds of restrictions. We don't even let two people sit together at the same table, lest the person eating a cheese sandwich take one of those buffalo wings, right, and have milk and meat in his mouth at the same time. And even then, it wouldn't be a violation of the Torah. So, you make these halachos, okay? All right, we'll close with that.